I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB with Tom Rolfs. He's the principal trumpeter of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Tom, it's a great opportunity to sit down with you and talk. Thanks for making some time today.
It's always nice to speak with you, Brian.
So Shostakovich's Piano Concerto No. 1 is on the program, and you're one of the two soloists in this piece. But we'll get to that in a minute. First, I'm just curious about Shostakovich in your life as a trumpet player. As a trumpet player myself, I know that there are certain composers that typically drive trumpet players into what they do. Was Shostakovich one of those composers for you when you were younger?
Not at the beginning, but most certainly now. I would put Shostakovich, for me personally, right up there with Mahler as far as having an individual, being able to, actually the composer encouraging the player to have an individual voice and contribute in some way to the musical statement of what he's trying to write. Yeah.
See, that's kind of interesting because it's not the Shostakovich. The symphonies don't have a ton of outright solo parts.
I think they do.
They do
actually.
Have more than I'm thinking
yeah,
of. Okay.
I think they do. I think there's always some gnarly, difficult trumpet solo. There's or very plaintive, soft calls,
right.
And ferociously fast, exciting passages. I think there's all sorts of personality in the trumpet writing of Shostakovich.
Yeah, and so you no doubt played plenty of Shostakovich symphonies before Andras came along, but now it's been a real deep dive.
Now it's a deep dive, yeah. And he does it so well, too.
Well, what has that done? I mean, how has that changed or helped?
Well, he has very definite ideas of what the personality of the music should be. So I think I would imagine everyone takes our cue from him and what he's feeling or thinking the music should state. It's very simple things, you know. It's like in the concerto today, in the solo in the last movement, and I was looking at it as more playful, but he wants it to sound like a drunk, you know. Like it's simple things. So I'm thinking, okay, how do I make this sound like a? How do I make that? Why does he want me? You know, I'm trying to. So it's, but in a spur of the moment, it's like, you know, okay, Tom, sound like a drunk right now, you know. And I think, well, wait, slow down. I'm not sure how to do that. Let me think about that. So I did it, and then I don't know. We'll see. I'm not sure I'm courageous enough to actually. We'll see. I have to like trust myself and just do it.
Well, and in my conversations with Andras, there are definitely things like that that he's brought up in the symphonies that sort of open this window that I didn't see before.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of see what you're talking about. When it comes to this particular concerto, do you remember kind of when you first came across this concerto? Was it in
sure.
a recording?
Yeah, it's something you know as a trumpet player from a fairly young age.
You learn the part pretty early.
Honestly, you know, so many pieces I have, recordings and performances, but I don't remember one with this. I remember what I've done it a number of times over the years, so I remember my performances, but I wouldn't say I had a definitive recording or performance that I recall when I was young.
Yeah.
You know, in my head, I can hear like someone like Armando Gatala playing it, you know, but
yeah.
I bet I probably wouldn't want to hear it because it's hard to match the kind of color that he had.
Right, right. Legendary principal trumpet of the Boston Symphony from the 1970s.
Yeah,
60s and 70s. 60s and 70s, yeah. But it's such an unusual part because it's kind of carnival music in some places and really melancholy sometimes.
That long slow solo and it changes again when I was practicing it this week. I was thinking I was thinking of it more kind of like a song I would sing to my toddler and just like a pretty, but then in the rehearsal there's something that was really incredibly sad and solemn about it and almost made me tear up, you know, when I thought of my own like tragedies in life, you know, and then so I'm not sure, you know, it changes, and that's kind of the great thing about Shostakovich's music, I think. And also it's on how, you know, watching Andras and how he is presenting it to me, you know, as a conductor, you know, you kind of feed off of that because, you know, he wears his personality right out front for everyone to see.
So this time around with the concerto feels a little different.
Feels different, yeah. Yeah, and uses. She's really spectacular. Holy Toledo, I had no idea. Boy, she's and what a nice person, too.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a great player. So that was kind of a treat to meet her.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's a terrific,
I'm sure you've
fun
talked
person.
To her,
I've talked with her, but her way of playing things. Yeah, she can surprise you with
not
just the ferocious technique.
Yeah, she surprised me a couple times in rehearsal where it was so like spectacular. I just kind of got confused for a moment. I didn't come in right. I thought this is not good. I thought I was the old veteran here. I shouldn't be the one getting lost.
So you talked about the solos that appear through the symphonies, and you've recorded so many of the symphonies now. What do you see as the way this concerto, is it more, are there things that you...
I think it's more of the same.
You bring
the
stuff from those symphonies
just
to the concerto?
Well, there's some long solos in the symphonies too, but it just happens. You know, it's really a piano concerto with some big trumpet solos. So, because essentially the concerto, the trumpet part is a lot of fanfares, fanfares after fanfares, which is typical trumpet writing, and then a couple of very substantial and solos that allow you to, you know, do different things with the music and speak in different kinds of voices, you know, which is always the goal.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the brass section of the BSO.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It changes as people change over time.
Yeah.
How would you describe, I mean, is there a particular way you think of the sound of this orchestra's brass section right now?
You know, since I'm sitting behind the trumpet, it's hard to know how it comes across in the audience. I've been told that it's a very highly regarded brass section right now. That's what people say, students say. I hear that all the time. I feel like we are we try to balance and we try to think about how. Sometimes I think my voice is too prominent. Then I'll ask Andres or I'll ask guest conductors if I'm too prominent. And I've never had anyone tell me I am too prominent. But sometimes I hear the recordings and I sound a little too hot. You know, hot as in like a, you know, the hot. You know, is that clear?
Yeah, sure.
Does everyone know what that means?
You're very, very present.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
In the front
and
of
then
the...
I feel kind of embarrassed. And then I'll go to Andres, or I'll go to our recording engineer, I'll go to Tony Fogg, am I too hot there? You know, so I don't really know for sure. I just kind of play.
Yeah, yeah. But is there a sort of brass section sound that you grew
I think
up
we
with
have,
that you kind
well,
of look to?
I went to school in Chicago.
Right.
So and when,
famous brass section.
Yeah, when they were at their greatest,
oh,
with
man.
Their great, you know, in the.
80?
I graduated in 83.
Yeah.
So they were, you know, I think Herseth was the principal trumpet player there was my age, you know, now, and he was like in his doing some of his best playing.
Right.
And it was a great brass section. I don't think we're the same as them though. I think we're different because we also have the history of this brass, which is a lot of personalities throughout the years. More individual, I would say, personalities. We have Voisin and Gatala and Schluter and like these people that have very Ron Baron, very individual voices, whereas Chicago is more of a homogenous feel. So I think we're kind of somewhere in between, I'd like to think. I sometimes worry that I worry about a lot of things in my playing. You know, I worry about like a moment ago I was saying I was too hot and too strident of a sound. Now I'm going to tell you that sometimes I also worry about being too boring and too predictable and too like, and then, you know, so, you know, I just, I'm kind of in the moment. So just whatever.
It's what keeps you on your toes.
Yeah,
huh?
You're
constantly looking for the angle.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But there's another thing about this brass section, not just the individual characters, and now that you bring these names up, Voisin, Gatala, Schluter, these are very, and going even farther back, Majere.
Well, Majere was he was the father of American trumpet playing,
right.
Because before he came to Boston, American trumpet playing was very German. In tradition, and Majere came, and he was such a great player, and all the great players of the 40s and 50s and 60s, 40s and 50s, I should say, studied with Majere, and then they went on to be the great, like Herseth, like, you know, they, you know, Bernie Adelstein, all these great players. So America became more of a French style of brass playing.
Yeah, and as that interacts with this particular orchestra, there's also that sort of ramp up of French identity.
Yes.
And so there's a different
absolutely.
Relationship of brass to the orchestra in this orchestra.
Well, I did an interview with someone who he was a, it was a, it's a, like a trumpet centric kind of interview, and he did he talked to the principal triple player in Boston, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Chicago, New York, Vienna, and Berlin, and asking to listen to select a recording, one piece of music, and then listen to it throughout the time. And the one thing that everyone recorded in the Boston Symphony was Sibelius II. And so the first one was a Koussevitzky recording. Gosh, is it possible it was from the 30s? I don't know. It was old. And I was stunned at how similar the orchestra sounds to it. Something is a life is moving through the orchestra throughout the decades, and so I still believe it's there.
I totally agree. It's one of the things that makes the BSO very special. And as a brass player, I think your job becomes a little different with this orchestra than it might be if you were in Cleveland or Chicago or LA.
I think so.
How?
Well, also the hall dictates that,
sure,
too. We have
okay.
a very special hall. So we play differently in this hall than other orchestras play in other halls. So the hall also kind of defines our playing and creates our playing.
Is it about the sort of the way you begin a note? Is it about the color
of your
sound?
Well, that's a big
sound?
Part of it. I think that is, too. Both of those are, I think we articulate with a much clearer front because of this hall. And so sometimes when we go on other halls, and we're also... we need a little bit of a brilliance to get through to the back of the hall. So sometimes when we go to other halls, it's hard to make an adjustment and back off just a little bit on that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes some sense, right?
Yeah.
How about Andras as a trumpet player? Is there something about his background, not just like from early? I mean, he was a professional trumpet player
right. Well
into his time studying conducting and of a pretty high level. Still
yeah.
plays, you know,
right.
here and there.
Yeah.
Is there something about him as a conductor that is different from others as a conductor, as the principal trumpet player for you?
Well, okay. So when he was first hired here and I heard he was a trumpet player, I thought this could be very good for me. This could be very bad for me. You know, it could go either way.
Right.
So it ended up being very good for me because he's such a great, and in fact, he got conducting and he came off such a nice person. So I asked, Håkan Hardenberger, the famous Swedish soloist, who was a good friend of Andras and now is a good friend of mine. I said, Håkan, is he really this nice? And Håkan said, absolutely. Don't worry, absolutely. So he happens to be a trumpet player, but more importantly, he's just a tremendous musician. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing that Andras wouldn't compromise his musical vision just for the sake of being nice, but he clearly has an understanding of what you're going through in any given week.
Sure.
He understands what the demands are on you, especially more than maybe, I mean, he understands what the demands are for the whole orchestra, but there's a special thing that he understands about you.
Yeah.
And yet he has a musical vision. So, so it sounds like what you're saying is that he can carry that out, but with a particular...
Yeah, it's really separated with him, like how the sound he's hearing for the orchestra, and he just happens to pay attention to what the trumpet player does, you know, and it's not just me, it's the other players too. So there is an affinity for that, but the dots don't really connect, you know, like he's just a great music director. A great conductor.
Sure.
End of story. You know, like Jaap van Zweden is a great violinist, but also is a music director of the New York Philharmonic. I'm not sure the dots connect there either. You know, I think they're just great. I mean, because there are a lot of great, great instrumentalists that, you know, are terrible conductors. Let's be honest. We're not going to mention names, but they're out there. So I'm not sure one has much to do with the other.
I hear you.
Except for the fact that he happens to be a triple player, and he does, like get excited when some of the solos, with the Shostakovich, he walked on in the rehearsal, he looked at the part, and I said, oh, you kind of want to play this, don't you? And he said, oh, no, like, but he knows what it is, he's played it, he's performed it, you know, when he was young.
I mean, the orchestra is doing so many different things, and it's built into your job that you do weekly subscription concerts, you do recordings during those concerts.
Right.
There is Tanglewood, there's Pops, touring.
Yeah.
Tell me about sort of how many times you have to pivot to a different sort of approach because of where you are in the course of your job.
Well, right? Like even this is a great example. Last week and last night, we played and recorded Symphony Domestica, which is like this incredibly, it's just like an abusive trumpet part. It's just not nice. And it's not fair. So, and then the very next day, today, I have to play all this, you know, finesse, which it kind of messes with your head a little bit. So, you know, when I first started, you know, playing in the rehearsal, I didn't know what the sound I was after, because I was still hearing all those Symphony Domestica, you know, calls. And
yeah, I mean, I think about your beginning of Tanglewood this summer. What you had to do. Yeah. I can't even remember all the pieces, but Copland 3, Mahler 5, you premiered this ridiculous concerto. You showed me the part for it. I couldn't even believe it.
Yeah.
Talk about fast pivoting.
That was that was unusual. There was another weekend a number of years back when it was like the Brandenburg with Pinka Zukerman and Mahler 2 and Tchaikovsky 6 or something like crazy. It's like, really? You know? But you're a trumpet player, so you understand that. Most people listening might not really, you know, but you can laugh, you know? So I can laugh. Everyone else is kind of going, oh, what's the big deal? He's paid to do that. So, part of his job. Well, you know, but I want to whine just a little bit, if you don't mind.
Here we are. This is what the mic is open for, you know? Right. Just bring That's it right. on. Well, one more question. Just getting back to the sort of centerpiece. There, I mean, again, so much activity that the BSO is involved in, and you in particular in your position, but the centerpiece project for now is the Shostakovich recordings.
Right.
Is there one symphony that you're thinking of that you just didn't know and you sat down and
Brian,
like, wow, what
Brian,
the heck is
I think,
this?
I think I knew three of them before.
you knew 5, 7, and...
One.
One, yeah.
1, 5, and 7.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Those are the ones that
I'm not joking. And then after that, they all kind of ran together with me and I'd played them, absolutely. But there's so many great Shostakovich symphonies.
Yeah, they're amazing. Is there one that sort of stands out as your favorite discovery among
I'd have to think about that.
Okay.
I can hear the solos in my head. I can hear the trumpet writing in my head.
Yeah, yeah. The Shostakovich symphony, I'll just share one with you from my perspective. The one that was an amazing discovery was 9, because it's so short and it's so kind of weird in structure.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that one. That's the, it's like, it's only, 25 minutes long or something. What you said about Andras saying play it like you're drunk reminds me of what he said about the last movement of this 9th symphony, where he says the picture is like a guy who's in a straitjacket who breaks out of the mental hospital running around the streets.
Sometimes you'll have these analogies and I'll just kind of look at him like, what? And he'll look back at me, I'll just shake my head.
That's fantastic. Well, Tom, it's awesome to talk with you on tape here. I know we run into each other at the hall and say hi and everything, but it's a great chance to talk with you, and I appreciate all your thoughts and insights, and Shostakovich sounds fantastic, so thanks for your time
today. Thanks, Brian. Thanks. Nice to talk to you. Bye.